Well, it's very dangerous when you've got two pastors here with two mics, because we could take all day. But I'll put my phone here, and trust me, I'm not going to be Snapchatting or anything like that. But well, Pastor Richard said to me a couple of weeks ago that he'd love to have a moment to really share
a moment
from his heart. Because I think about three or four people approached you, Pastor Richard, didn't they, in the same week?
That's right. Yeah. Four separate people, four separate incidences who had no idea of my story and my life, and all they saw was Richard here on Sunday morning.
Yeah, and you know, it's for those of us that get to walk with this man, closely, you get to hear these snippets, these stories every now and then, and you go, wow, I didn't know that about you, Pastor Richard. I thought you were this smooth-talking, good-looking, orange-haired, red-haired, that preaches yeah.
We all know it's true, don't we?
He's my boss, so I kind of have to get some brownie points here. But this morning's a good opportunity for us to, I guess, get behind the veneer or what you see on Sunday and just get a bit deeper. Who's excited about that? Yeah? So, for those of you that have my mobile number, feel free to text me. I'll turn off if you've got specific questions. Feel free to text me. I won't publicly make known my number, but if you have specific questions that you'd like to ask, I'll filter them, and I may or may not ask them because I've already got some questions that I'd like to ask, and I've got the mic. All right.
Cool.
He's a bit nervous. He said to me, he's all prepared. He's got his, beautiful notes and then PowerPoint to rely on, but not this morning, sir. All right? I've got the power this morning.
Ooh.
Oh. All right. So I thought we could start with some quick-fire questions, all right? Quick-fire questions about this man. And here goes. I've got about 10, and there may be more.
Mm.
So first question, what's your nickname?
I go by all kinds of names.
Not what Chrissy calls you.
Yeah, that would be X-rated. But I've got to tell you that the most nervous person in the room is my wife. More than me. I've had a few instructions before we did this.
We'll hear from Chrissy, Pastor Chrissy, shortly.
We will. Yeah. But now, as a kid, my brother, actually, older brother, called me Titch, and that seemed to stick. And so Titch, as in T-I-T-C-H, and so he will still call me Titch. So
For guys like me that's a bit slow on the uptake, what does that mean?
I haven't got a clue.
Oh, I thought there was a deep and meaningful reason for it. Okay.
Although, interestingly enough, later on when we were reading bedtime stories, we came across a book called Titch. Oh. Do you remember that? And actually, it was a boy with ginger hair. It was really a crack-up. But Titch, have no idea what it means, nothing deep and meaningful.
Okay, favorite color?
Haven't really got a favorite color, but I do like dark colors.
Yeah.
Maybe blue? Go with blue.
Yeah, Pastor Richard and I have kind of almost the same shirt. So one day we showed up at the office. So I actually texted him this morning. I'm wearing this shirt this morning. So, so we got some memos going this morning. So we're
did.
Not.
Yeah. We did.
Cool. A treat you will have when Chrissy isn't looking.
Well, many of you will know that I'm quite partial to a dried apricot. But I can have those even when she's looking. But the thing that I particularly like that I will often reserve for special moments is Weet-Bix with some cream and brown sugar. Weet-Bix, nice soggy Weet-Bix with actual cream. And I know the health, the diet thing we're on, but if she's not around, I'm very weak when it comes to cream and brown sugar. Is anybody with me? Can somebody say, yeah, I like that too. Great, great, that's me. So, but my conscience usually is pricking when she's around.
All right.
In fact,
right.
I think she is my conscience.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a direct line to Chrissy too, you know. So I'm around a lot of times when Chrissy's not around. So I'm keeping an eye on you, Pastor Richard. If you weren't at church on a Sunday morning, where would you be?
Either still in bed or riding my motorcycle in the sunshine up to the Puhoi pub.
Oh, I like
where they have a beautiful, massive breakfast. So it's a great place for bikers to ride up, and it's Kiwiana, it's old.
Wow.
And there's heaps of lovely motorcycles.
Yeah, we've been up there, eh?
We have.
The beautiful art.
That's where I take international guests, man.
Yeah. That's great. I've got some great questions here. So, okay.
From you or from them?
From them. So, couple of questions censored, but this one's pretty good. What's the secret to maintaining a beautiful ginger beard?
Well, the first thing is it's not ginger anymore. But you know what? Eat your vegetables, Johnny. It always puts hairs on your chest and hairs on your chin, brother.
All right. Strangest thing you've ever eaten?
Ooh. Would that include drinking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ingested, I suppose.
The strangest thing I've ever ingested. Is it ingested or digested?
Oh, you got to ingest it first before you digest it.
Okay.
I'm assuming.
Okay. would be turpentine.
Oh.
Yeah. So, bit of a story. This is back in the days before we had cell phones, before there's colored TV, when I was about 3 or 4, and before they had those locking caps. My parents are very fond gardeners and had a big orchard in the back of our back property, and they put me down for an afternoon nap. I think it was around 3 or 4, something like that. And I woke up typically very, very thirsty. They were in the garden. The little door to underneath the house was open, and there was bottles there, and it looked like lemonade or some wonderful beverage. And so at that young age, I helped myself. And I gargled about half the bottle. Apparently, it was quite a lot.
Wow.
Went outside the door outside and began to foam and froth and writhe and freak.
Wow.
And Mum and Dad were gardening and just put his fork through his foot and grabbed me. And we headed off to Green Lane Hospital.
Oh.
That's right. Back in the days, right back to, if you go out to Panmure, Mount Wellington, that old highway, they didn't have the bridge back then. And halfway to the hospital, they ran out of petrol.
Oh, wow.
It's true. So what they did is they tipped me up and but they actually ran out of gas, had a dodgy gauge. Dad, thankfully, had a bit of gas in the can. And, yeah, I just was gone and got there and, clinically died and was there for months just pumping out this turp. So that's... It's not very quick fire, light and fluffy, but that's actually the strangest thing I've ever ingested.
That's pretty strange. Mm. That's pretty strange. I thought it was going to be like blue cheese or something like that, you know. I was around to witness this man eat a fruit called durian. Who knows what durian is? Yeah, come on. Okay, that's...
I'm still recovering.
Yeah. Well, when you're a missionary, you know, a pastor at heart, you got to have a missionary tummy.
That's right.
Yeah. Childhood dream job.
Ooh, didn't really have one. As you'll hear shortly, much of my thinking was around surviving and getting through. But certainly when I left school, I was raised, or the dominant thought was, get a trade, son, get an apprenticeship. And I was always a practical person, so I left school actually to take a butchery, to be a butcher.
Oh.
Yeah. And, of course, thinking, okay, what's the question they're going to ask at the interview? And so, why do you want to be a butcher? And I thought, well, I like meat. That didn't really work. But anyway, I left school, and then I went to start the job, and between that couple of weeks, they sold the business, and I had no job.
Oh. You still like meat.
I love meat.
So anyone need some butchery going? This man, he's not just a pastor, he's a butcher too. All right, show us a special talent you have, like balancing a pencil in your nose or something like that. Something different.
I don't really have one, do I? Or, of course, there's the, now you got me going.
Yeah.
I've got the mating call of a duck.
I've heard that one. Oh.
Now, you ask yourself, how do we know it was a mating call? Well, some lovely ladies of a feathered kind took a shine to me. We're down at Western Springs. Anyone know Western Springs out by the zoo? It's a fantastic park. Down there with our boys doing the young toddler family thing, you know, spending the day at the park. And I started being an idiot. And they started to follow. Like the Pied Piper all the way back to the car. And we discovered it was mating season. And so the poor girls were a bit confused.
Okay. Your all-time hero could be a... Ooh. Could be a real person or could be a fictional one.
Wow. There's several people that I really admire or really love. The first name that came to mind was actually William Wallace. I love the movie Braveheart, and I love, yeah, so I don't know if you'd call him a hero. I think he is a hero in Scottish history. But conviction, sacrifice, all those attributes that we love, it just, I've watched that. I never get tired of watching that. But there are other people. I think of Pastor Rob Wheeler right now. Who else? Just, yeah, he's my spiritual father and of my last church. We were there, I was there 28 years, so he saw me right through. So he's actually a very old man now, but a good man.
Awesome. That's really cool. That's really
cool.
What
else you got there, Pastor?
I got, man, these texts are just streaming in, man. What's your pet peeve?
Not church stuff, eh?
Not church
okay,
stuff.
Not
yeah,
church
personal stuff.
Stuff. Okay. Oh, pet peeve? I find people in the fast lane that stay in the fast lane and they drive slow, extremely... a real gift to my life to make me more like Jesus after I repent of horrible thoughts and rude gestures. I find that for some reason really ignorant and irritating. In fact, I can feel it now, even as I'm telling you. These lanes are empty. They sit right there. It just drives me bonkers. There you go. That's a pet peeve.
So if you're on the motorway coming from the North Shore at around 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday... Please pardon my pastor. what's the name of your bike?
Susie.
Why?
Because it's a Suzuki.
Is that the real reason?
It actually is.
Okay.
I have a little bit of a habit. I have a habit of giving bikes names. And so
had to ask.
She's right. Lovely.
Yeah, isn't she?
She's blue. In fact, I thought maybe I could bring it here one day, you know?
Yeah.
She's
right on in. From
doesn't answer back. She just faithful, reliable. Just goes where I want her to go. It's beautiful.
Yeah, Christy will have an opportunity shortly. All right, on to a bit more serious stuff. Ooh. Bring us back to your childhood, sir. About ages 0 to 10, if you can remember. Tell us
what
about
are you saying,
life.
Pastor Weon?
Well, I don't really remember anything earlier than 5 years old. You know, I don't have many pictures to show my life before that. So, it's a blank to me. But I don't know about you. So, 0 to 10.
0 to 10. I actually knew that was coming. And so, I've actually put a few thoughts together. Otherwise, I'd ramble and it wouldn't be helpful to anybody. But, and you said both positive and negative, right?
Yeah.
So, I've actually got a slide here. Let's see if it works from here. Here we go. Oh, no. Okay, turn the button on. Here we go. Where are we now? Oh, move along, actually. I discovered that was my brother, not me. All right.
Everybody say, oh.
Because we, as you'll tell, I had a very, very fractured, troubled childhood, really. So it was anything but normal and anything but whole and healthy. And you have to understand, it was 1966 when I was born. And I was saying this to Chrissy yesterday. I said, wow, even being raised in a divorced home, there was a lot of stigma around that. It's not like that today, I don't think, or not as great. So I have a brother, as you can see there, and a sister. So older brother Anthony, he's 3 years older, lives in Auckland. Got five kids, doing great. And then a younger sister, Gina, her name is. She is actually half Maori and half Australian. And we adopted her at birth. And so she's living in England at the moment and married to an Englishman and had one child. And they're returning, actually, back in a few months' time, coming back here to live. So that's my siblings. My parents divorced when I was about five. I still remember that quite clearly. Dear me. Don't do that, Richard. We were doing well until then. But as a childhood, I had a lot of health issues. So you maybe don't know, but I was born with very small, everything connected to my ears, including my ear, which is why you find me in the front row most Sundays adjusting this. But I have very small ears, and then the internal tubing is all very small and has a lot of hair. And so I was constantly having health issues and grommets, and so that affected my speech and schooling and all of that. So there was like a health thing that was running all the way through, but at the same time, a very broken childhood. My mother and father met, they met in a band. Now back then, a rock and roll band was very edgy. I don't know what we'd liken that to today. Thrash metal or Nirvana or something, I don't know, but very edgy. And it was drugs were involved, music, drugs, seances. And so it was a very toxic environment in a home. And as well as my father was raised as a theosophist, which is really New Age, before New Age became New Age. So we had all this stuff going on, and looking back now, I'm pastoring and helping couples with marriage, you can look back and just see it was a train wreck waiting to happen. So Dad was a womanizer, and he was playing the single game the whole time through, and just home was an emotional, you don't know what the days were going to be like. And so in the end, he left, and I was about five. And so that was very much really that component of home being troubled, and then health issues as well. I really struggled at school. A lot of behavioral issues. If you looked at my reports, they were not very favorable. And so I wrote the word restless, very rugged, very restless. Got into a lot of trouble. Very angry person, despised authority. But really, looking back now, it's just unfathered. Never had anyone really define me. But that was my schooling life. On the positive side, I had some good buddies who were equally trouble as well. So you find really just in lots of trouble and minor crimes and getting caught for different things. Went to River Hills Primary School and Pakuranga Intermediate out there in the east side. So we're out there and doing the thing, and even up to 10 years of age, just being crazy and running amok and causing lots of trouble. Does that give you an idea of?
I can't imagine that. I've got to say, who thought that picture right there looks like Isaac? Anyway.
There's a little picture there. Look at that, and fail like that. 1975. Can anybody see a little Richard? So I was so much, my brother and I, we were so much trouble, and again, you've got a single mum. Again, I'll say, back in those days, it was really a big stigma. A lady would not make it public or try to hide the fact that she was not married. And as a kid, you had a stigma. So we were known. And typically, then you suffered financially. So we're on the old DPB, but that wasn't much to go around. And despite my grandparents being very wealthy, millionaires, in fact, my mother refused to take any help to make sure she survived.
Well, you know, look at him now. Amazing story of transformation and hope. Let's enter Christy. Who wants to hear from Christy?
Thank you.
Let's invite Christy. Pastor Christy Oeban, come on up. Well, Christy.
He wasn't supposed to put that photo in. I told him not to, but he never obeys.
All right, he's a little bit cheeky. Oh. Okay, here's the question. Pastor Christy, yeah. Tell us of the very moment that you first saw Pastor Richard in a special light.
In a special light? Well, a little bit of background for me is that I had waited for a long time in prayer for this man. Years, in fact, waiting for him to show up. It was actually right under my nose, and I didn't realize it because we'd known each other for quite some time through worship band. He was a drummer and I was a keyboardist, and so we served together for years and in the youth group. And yeah, so I knew him, but I didn't know him. And so I had been praying and waiting and waiting for God to bring this special man, whoever he is going to be, into my life. And God answered my prayer, but in an unusual way, because it was somebody I knew. And when the light began to dawn on that, the shock of, oh my goodness, really? Oh, but not in an awful way, but just, oh, it's him? So, anyway. So I actually had to take a day off work because I was so overawed that God had actually answered my prayer and that he was the person that God had chosen for me. The reason I had to wait, because there's quite an age gap between Richard and I'm 6 years? Yeah, 6 years older than him. So when I was in my prime thinking, in those days it was always around 21, 22, you know, and if you got beyond that, it was like, oh my goodness, it's all over. It was silly. It's silly. And it's just one of those horrible cultural lies that we buy into, even now probably. He was still in high school when I was 21 or 22, pulling up his socks in high school. So I thought, where are you, where are you? And that's where he was. Being naughty in school. So I had to wait, and so it wasn't until I was 27, I think, and he was just 21. And he had his 21st birthday, which I helped kind of put together, again, not knowing that this was going to happen, and then it was just kind of a suddenly moment, which I won't go into all the details, but it was quite enlightening.
Suddenly.
Anyway, so that's the history around where I kind of knew. We'd been on a missions trip together too, part of a big group going to China, but still nothing until we got back. And then he had his 21st birthday, and after that, God just literally took blindfolds off our eyes. That's what it felt like. And okay. And began to see each other in a different light. A good light. So, does that answer your question?
Wonderful. I guess the natural progression from that, Pastor Christy, is who wants to hear the proposal story? All the ladies in the house.
Okay. After we didn't actually have a dating time because we wouldn't knew each other. So we pretty much went straight into courtship, which is possibilities, right? And so I kind of knew that it was going to lead to that. We talked about marriage, actually, and so I knew that there was going to be a time when he was going to propose. And but the timing of it was quite interesting because I just had my wisdom teeth out. And if anybody's had their wisdom teeth out, it's not a good look. You're all kind of like one of those chipmunk look and feeling pretty awful. Anyway, so he decided that week it was going to be that week. Great. So he sort of tricked me into going back to where he was flatting. Actually, he was flatting with my now brother-in-law. So that's a whole different story, where our families are all kind of connected through marriage. Anyway, that's the story. If you want to find out about that story, come see me. So anyway, the week of my wisdom teeth extraction, we'd gone into town on a date. I think, I don't know what we were doing, just wandering around or went to a movie or something. And he said, I need to pop into home before I drop you home. And so we went to his flat, and I said, I'll just stay in the car. You know, you go and get what you need. You forgot something, or I don't know what it was. And he said, no, come in. So I thought, oh, okay, we're all nursing this jaw. So we go to the front door, and he didn't put the light on. He had the remote for the stereo by the door and flicked on this music that we quite like listening to. I can't remember what the track is.
Oh, I do.
Do you?
Simply Red.
Oh, right.
Holding back the years.
It was very nice, moody music. I can't remember that. So the music starts up, and I'm like, what is going on? And so he didn't say anything. He just took me by the hand. It was still dark. It was pitch dark, and sat me down on the couch in the dark and said, just wait here. So I'm sitting, I can't see anything. And then I hear this match light, and as he goes to light these candles, 20 red roses appeared before my eyes. He'd obviously thought exactly where I was going to be sitting, and so with the candlelight on the roses, it looked amazing. So I'm, oh my goodness! And he had the ring stuffed down the cushions of the couch and got down on his knee and asked me to marry him, and I just blubbered. But it was the most romantic, lovely moment that I can remember for us, and it was something that I had longed for and waited for years. And if I can take a moment to bring God into it, because he really was the orchestrator of this, and I never ever doubted his timing again after that. You know, sometimes we don't get our answer when we want it, and a lot of the time we don't, actually. But God says, if you just hang on a minute, I've actually got it sorted. I've got it. Just wait, dear. He often calls me dear. Just wait, dear. I've got it sorted.
God calls you dear.
Well, he does too, but God calls me dear. I've got it sorted. So just wait. And he did.
Good.
And I was so overcome. That's why I had to take the day off, because God's timing is perfect, and he always comes through. And we just keep trusting him, and he is faithful. So that was the proposal, and then that happened.
Yeah, let's give Pastor Christy a hand. Thank you so much, Pastor Christy. Yep. Thank you. Wow. Wish we had a couple of hours to go in deep with both of them. But Pastor Richard, back to you. I was going to give him an opportunity to reply to say when he first laid eyes on Christy, but I won't. You can find out from him yourself. How did God enter the picture? I mean, we've heard a little bit about your story, your background. Didn't sound like God was around much in the early years. So, yeah.
Good question. God came on the picture through the salvation of my mother. She... now, what was the sequence of events? She got miraculously healed. So she, through all the divorce, through the drugs and whatever, she was addicted to barbiturates. And so we as children were pumped, you know, sent out to different relatives. She was not fit to be a mother, and so option was to become orphans of the state or be taken by uncles and aunties. So that's what happened. If you can, it was a classic Book of Acts situation. She was staying with my auntie in St. Helier's, and just out of just sheer desperation, cried out to God, if there's a God, help me. And right there and then, she had a miracle. She couldn't actually walk straight because she was so out of it, And she then gave her heart to Jesus and was listening back in the days to Christian radio and found a local church, went to that church. So she got radically saved. She carried around a tub of pills for years as a testimony. So she got radically saved. So that's really how God came into our home. A young Christian, no discipleship, nothing like that, trying to make our way. That's really where God, obviously I understand God was there when I was born and so forth, but in terms of Christianity, and that actually just pushed my father further away. He wanted nothing to do with that. And so, he was gone by then and was trying to indoctrinate, and we had caught, those kids were caught in the middle of all that. So that's really how God came into it.
Wow. I think you shared with me also that you were, then you became very involved with the church. Your mum was, brought you to church a lot. And so it kind of became your, that was your culture almost for a long time. Eh?
That's right. Very much so. So I really lived a double life. So church, spiritual family took the place of biological family. A lot of our relatives lived outside of Auckland. We had one family in St. Heliers. Otherwise, we're scattered everywhere. So we didn't have what, you know, you see in some cultures, you know, you can just go and stay with uncle and auntie, grandparents. We didn't have that dynamic at all. So spiritual family became really family. And that was the closest thing I saw to manhood and normality. And mum was quite strong in that church. I say double life because you had this school life and this early teenage years that were plagued with behavioral issues. And so I kept the two worlds separate. And so I was quite confused and quite mixed up. I enjoyed living on the edge, but I also found something at church. Often you'd find me kind of hanging around the fringe. I kind of like wanted it, but didn't want it, if you know what I mean. So that was really interesting years, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I guess that some of us would relate to that becoming a Christian is not just a prayer we pray, right?
That's right.
It's not just a one-moment thing, and I guess what you're saying is that you've been around church for a while, and you might have prayed a few prayers, gone to a few altar calls, but I think you shared with us men that, you know, we went during our discipleship group, 6:30 a.m., Denny's, Tuesdays for the last 6 years or something like that. Heard the story a couple of times, but why don't you share with the church? There was a moment when you went from having Jesus as your Savior to Jesus as your Lord as well.
That's right. So, where do we start? So I called myself an altar call junkie. I was forever sorry, but never surrendered. I was that wild horse that never allowed God to, you know, get his hands on. And so all through those teenage years and going to church, I think I got caught up with churchianity, not Jesus. So it was the family that it brought. It was, and I said, sorry, I knew I'd sin, and I'd be, you know, always apologizing to God, and meant it. But I recognize now, looking back, there was never a surrender in my heart. And this went actually into our marriage. So going to church, serving on the worship team, youth leadership, all of that. But I didn't know Jesus as Lord. I might sing the song, but I didn't know him as Lord. He wasn't Lord of my life. Because I was afraid to let go. And, you know, forms of authority in my life had been negative. So I remained, tried to keep control. And we got married, and it was all going fine for a while there. But things began to sour, and that was really, I got involved in a band, and we'd often get paid with trays of beer and cash and bits and pieces, and I found prayer really difficult. I found reading the Bible particularly difficult. I didn't like reading at all, never did. I love reading now, but I've trained myself to enjoy reading, and that goes right back to my ears, not learned language development. Couldn't use language well. I'd always sort things out with my fists, not my mouth, if you know what I mean. And so, anyway, we got married, and so I just you know, try hard for God and try to do the right thing, try not to think the wrong thoughts, and just this constant up and down, I measured it like every week or two, just apologizing here and there and everywhere, and I got to a point in 1990, I thought, that's it, I'm tired of the game, I'm tired of doing church or doing, you know, not having any power in my life. And so I talked to Chrissy about it and said, look, we're still going to go to church. I've got, Carl was born, our first son at that stage. So I thought, God, you know, there's no power in this. There's no, you know, I don't love to read the Bible. I don't love to pray. And I'm tired of making mistakes and apologizing, making amends. So I did a deal. I said, I go to church because be a good dad and be a good model and be support my wife. But I'm not going to start chase you and do altar calls and say things that I'm not really going to follow through on. And if that makes sense. And so I kind of felt God's pleasure in that. Finally, Richard's getting real. And I just got involved in my band. Again, did church. During that period, really my heart, things began to drift to the point that Chrissy really thought our marriage was not looking good. I certainly wasn't being a good husband. But in 1993, things would happen. I'd sense the presence of God and in the meetings, and I'd want to, you know, but I thought, man, if I give this another go and it doesn't work out, I'll get disillusioned. So I held back and I held back and I held back. Well, our church had a new pastor come, and a good man, and he wanted to restart evening services, and so he did a big, you know, brought in a guest speaker and did a big campaign. And Chrissy wanted to get me to that, and I, you know, I was the dutiful husband dragging my feet to that meeting. Well, that meeting was very, very significant, very powerful, both for Chrissy and for I. And she can tell her story one other day, but she became a new woman that night. Just some of the things we talked about this morning, just heaviness, curses over her life. But for me, I actually got yet again a prophetic word. I had lots of prophetic words. And I didn't respond to the altar call. No, this has got to be different. God, what are you saying? What's going on? We went home, and Chrissy went to bed. Carl was in bed. And I sat there into the wee hours of the morning talking to God audibly like this. Go away, go away, go away. So it was in March 93. And I sat there, and I read the book of Hebrews, all 13 verses. Now, that's miracle. That's walking on water stuff for me. And not only was I reading, I had understanding. And if you don't understand Hebrews, it's the overview of the Old Testament and the New Testament, what Jesus has done. And so just understanding and life and just, I don't know, what hour, 1 or 2 in the morning, there at Harbert Ave, Mount Albert, 22 Harbert Ave, and just the reality of knowing Christ and totally separate to church. And I love church. Hopefully you understand that. But I needed an encounter with Jesus personally. And that was the night, really, that I, the wild horse, let Jesus ride and surrender. 1993. And so I can honestly say since that day to this, it's just been an incredible journey of the reality of Christ. And so I still have to say sorry to God for things, but I was surrendered and I understood Him as Lord of my life. And so that's been a journey, but the surrendering and trusting was huge for me. But then discovering the blessing of obedience and the blessing of coming under His Lordship, the blessing of letting Him father me. The scriptures say, Psalm 68, that He is a father to the fatherless. It's true. I'm a living, breathing example. That's not just wishful thinking. I can look back now and I see moments in time, and I think that's why I got so many prophetic words. God wouldn't let me go. Even though I was hell-bent on running away. I was a runner, like the wild horse.
Thank you, Pastor Richard. Yeah, and I think that's such a key point in that as we come to a close, there many times as in our walks as Christians, we can have that tug of war with God, can't we? And it we can come to the altar call and say sorry for the 1400th time, and you know, and feel bad for it. And is there something wrong with me? Why am I not getting this? And you know, thank you, Pastor Richard, for sharing that, because I think it shows that it takes a process for all of us to get to that point of submission. Because having Jesus as our Savior is one thing, because He saves us, requires nothing of us. But when we submit to His Lordship, it's us giving Him complete surrender. And I love that word meekness. To define it, it describes a wild horse with its muscles rippling, just ready to pounce, but not moving until the master says, go. And that's what meekness is. And lordship is a little bit like that. It's not becoming weak, but it's actually deciding to give everything. And yes. Yeah, and you know, only God can give us the power to submit, right, Pastor Richard?
Yeah, that's true. I think coming to the end of yourself is really, really key. So I know what it's like to try and get enough of God to make everything, all the problems go away, but still be in control. And a lot of the issues we go through is just an issue of control. And as I go on in the Lord, I've just had to learn to let more and more of that happen. And as you can see, the image behind me, really just saying, God, have your way. And I, one other person in the Bible, and maybe I'll just take it from here, Pastor, we don't know if it's okay, and I'm conscious of time, but another wild horse in the Bible is a guy called Moses. He's probably my number one character of the Bible. If you remember, he just had lots of issues too, lots of childhood issues. Pharaoh wanted to kill the boys, and his mother, if you recall, put him in the little basket and put him in the river, and off he sailed down the river there and was picked up by Pharaoh's daughter. And so it doesn't even give the name of his father when it was very popular at the time. His father's nameless, doesn't feature his biological father. And I thought, wow, I can relate to that. And he gets raised, he's actually adopted, and it's cross-cultural, by Pharaoh and by Pharaoh's daughter. Pharaoh's daughter finds him, but then he gets raised in the house of Pharaoh. And if you remember, he saw an Egyptian beating up a Hebrew. And he intervened and he killed. He was guilty of murder. So, and it says, if you look in chapter 2, he is living with a people that he's not of. You can read into that if you look at the background to it. He had identity issues, insecurity, sin, murder. He ran as soon as he found out that he was seen killing this Egyptian. He ran, and he got out to the desert there. And I'm just paraphrasing very, very quickly here, but he just went to do his own thing. He thought, man, what a life, and just my lot now is to survive, build a career. And there he was, and there's the burning bush. And the other aspect I relate to with Moses is he sometimes, at least in these early years, he's not very spiritual. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel not very spiritual. And he has a burning bush, and it says an angel of the Lord appeared to him. And Moses is not so concerned, not so interested in the angel of the Lord appearing to him. He's trying to figure out, why is the bush not being consumed? And it says that he tries to have a look at the bush, and God thinks, what's he doing? I'm trying to have a moment here. I'm appearing to him in the bush. And so the voice of God comes out at Moses. He says, Moses, you're on holy ground. This is me speaking. And this incredible conversation backwards and forwards with God to Moses. Moses was reluctant. He was unqualified, uneducated, had issues. I think sometimes we think we have to, you know, have it all together, be very spiritual, to be used by God, but you don't. If that was the case, I certainly would. I never thought I'd be a pastor. I never aspired to be a pastor. Since that time in 1993, I've only endeavored to have a heart that's open to God, to love him and love people. And just, I love, Proverbs says, your gift makes room for you. So I never aspired to do that. It was just doors opened, and I was the only guy that said he'd do the job. But Moses is there, and he's making excuses, saying, Lord, not me, why me? And he actually says, I'm not eloquent of speech. That's me. Remember my speech problem? I can barely listen to myself on podcast because of that. I listen for it. And it's a reminder of, it's actually a gift, because it reminds me of the blessings of God and the fact that he can take broken people and use them for his glory. He took Moses, and Moses is just making excuses. You know, my upbringing, my tribe, my people, I'm not very good at English, you know, or very good at Aramaic or whatever. In the end, it actually got so bad, God got a bit mad with him. And he said, okay, well, look, I'll bring Aaron beside you. So I want you to understand something, and really that was the heart of this today, was to learn a bit about my life, but that you would understand that no matter where you are, what mistakes you've made, and what shortcomings you have, whether it's English, whether it's a temper, and maybe some people feel, you know, that's, I'm just not a good person. I failed God so often. I can relate to that. God is very faithful, and actually, God loves to use people of all kinds of backgrounds for his glory. And so I want you to understand that, please, family, that, you know, the enemy lies to you, and you think you've got to become someone that you're not. If you just have a heart after him, he honestly, 2 Chronicles says, you know, the Lord looks to and fro. He's got a fro. Yeah. He looks to and fro across the whole earth, looking to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal. It's a loyal heart that qualifies you, not a perfect past, not education, although I believe in education, a loyal heart, and bringing, saying, God, you can see all the junk, see all these cracks and fractures. Yeah, let the kids come. It's all good. I'm going to wrap this up here in a few minutes. I will be done by 12:30, absolutely the latest. It's not about us, and it's not about our backgrounds and our heritage. And that way, it ensures that, you know, God gets all the glory and all the praise. And so, young people, particularly teenagers, just keep your eyes on Jesus. Don't let church, don't get someone to church that you miss Jesus. All those years were wasted. Well, not wasted, because they're all part of the story, but, you know, I did a lot of sinning. I was a very good sinner. And let me just get myself together a bit here. You know, and I have to live with those memories. They don't have any power over me anymore, because God's forgiven me and he's cleansed me and made me whole. But they're there. People I've hurt. People I love. So, yeah, God, forgiveness is a beautiful thing, isn't it? And God can take all of that, and he can use you. He fathered me, loved me, told me, Richard, you don't have to perform to win my love. You don't have to perform. That night in March 1993, I wish I remember the date, I let go. All this, you know, self-defense, insecurity, stories, trying on my own strength, I let go. And there have been times since, it's been a long time. been times since that I've wanted to pick those things up and, you know, or, you know, try to do things in your own strength, you see, because you've got to survive, right? This old man keeps coming up sometimes, and less frequently. Make things happen. And the more I've gone on with the Lord, the peace that I know and live with is beautiful. That's really where these tears come from. It's because of his goodness in my life, not because I'm hurting. I'm free. I'm really glad. Really grateful. And I'm still a work in progress. So thank you all for accepting me. And from time to time, even from the pulpit, little bits and pieces will come out. The Lord's still teaching me. I still sin. But hopefully, keep a loyal heart and keep tender and let him continue to mold and shape my life. And God can do that for you. God is doing that for you. And with that, so much more is going on in my head right now, but time is on us. I do want to close and give an opportunity for people who would like to give their life to Christ or recommit to the Lord. One of the lies of the enemy is that we have to go away and try to fix ourselves, then be acceptable to him. That's not true. Otherwise, I would never come to him. My boys, my children, they don't have to fix themselves before they come to me. And nor do you. God loves you. God will heal you. God will restore you if you surrender. Can we pray? Lord, in this time right now, if you need to slip out, please do. In this time right now, Lord, I just pray that you'd find amongst us, Lord, hearts that are surrendered to you. And Lord, although it's been a lot about my life, the reality is that it's all your craftsmanship. Only you could heal my heart. Only you could forgive me. When I felt worthless and dirty and used and unworthy, when darkness would set upon me, you delivered me. You have enabled me to learn what it is to be a husband and a father. And you're still teaching me that. God, I want to thank you. Beyond, Lord, all the words, beyond all the songs that we can sing, I simply thank you that you never give up, that you always are there, patient, waiting for us to invite you, waiting for us to disarm ourselves, stop trying to protect ourselves, and stop trying to manipulate you, and just to surrender. So while we're quickly trying to wrap this up, but while we're in this attitude, this place, I do want to put an invitation, an opportunity for people today that need to surrender. They need to surrender, whether it's in particular surrendering to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. Yes, he'll save you, but he's Lord. And when you make him Lord, when you give up your life and you let him take control, then you discover a life that you never dreamed possible. It's beyond your wildest dreams. Seems painful at the beginning. Seems, oh, I don't know. He's going to ask me to stop this and stop that. And I don't know if I want to right now. Friend, I want to tell you, on the other side is joy and peace. There's no need to run. There's wholeness and there's healing. And you can have that. If he'd done it for me, he can do it for you. If he did it for me.